Hi, and welcome to Lakeshore Updates. I'm Dee Dodson. On this edition of the podcast, you'll hear the latest on aging infrastructure that could adversely affect operations at steel mills along Lake Michigan's shoreline. Sharon Jackson reports on a new one-of-a-kind industrial park in LaPorte County. And Chris Nolte has a conversation with Bishop-elect Robert McClory of the Diocese of Gary. All of that and more on this edition of Lakeshore Update. Residents who live near Lake Michigan are unlikely to get clarity this year on who can use beaches in front of private property and for what purpose. Three state bills that would have addressed that issue failed this legislative session. Two of them would have given lakefront property owners the sole rights to the beach as long as those rights were stated in the most recent deed to the property. One of them would have affirmed the Indiana Supreme Court decision, which said that the public can use the beach up to where the high water mark usually hits the sand. It also would have satisfied the court's directive to define what kinds of activities are allowed on those beaches, like walking, fishing, and swimming. Democratic Senator Karen Tallien, who co-authored the bill, says she'll continue to make sure Indiana code reflects what the state Supreme Court has ruled. You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson. Experts say aging infrastructure could be adversely affecting operations at steel mills along the Lake Michigan's shoreline in northwest Indiana. Anthony B. Sindone, a clinical assistant professor of finance and economic development at Purdue University Northwest, told the Times that many U.S. steel mills are more than a century old. Gary Works in Gary suffered extensive flooding just before Thanksgiving, forcing the company to temporarily shut down its blast furnaces to prevent potential explosions. There was also an explosion at ArcelorMittal Indiana Harbor in East Chicago shortly after Christmas that damaged a furnace and control room. You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson. A Northwest Indiana man who was set free on bond on attempted murder charges is accused of fatally shooting his girlfriend, who he allegedly previously attempted to kill. Hammond police say Charles Goforth is charged with first-degree murder in the death of Sylvia Williams. A relative on Wednesday found the 55-year-old Williams dead in her mobile home. Goforth was charged with attempted murder for shooting Williams on November 1st. He was freed on an almost $8,000 bond, and a judge allowed him to return home to Independence, Missouri, where he was arrested on Thursday. You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson. This week marks the halfway point of the legislative session. The House already approved several education bills and sent them to the Senate for consideration. Now, Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jenny Lindsay tells us about the bills the Senate will send to the House.
Lawmakers proposed more than 100 education bills, but the number still alive has dwindled to just about two dozen. Bills from the Senate include a measure that would amp up test accommodations for students with reading disabilities and a bill to require that high school seniors complete the free application for federal student aid, or FAFSA, before graduating. Another would reinforce that schools can post the phrase, "In God We Trust," in classrooms. Similar bills from both chambers will likely be combined before sessions end, including one bill to allow schools more flexibility in their curriculums and scrapping controversial teacher licensure requirements. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jeannie Lindsay.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson. Legislation aimed at Marion County Prosecutor Ryan Mears' decision not to prosecute simple marijuana possession won't advance this session. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports the bill didn't make it past the Senate floor.
The bill said if a local prosecutor makes a policy decision not to prosecute certain crimes, the Indiana Attorney General could appoint a special prosecutor to do so and charge the county to pay for it. It garnered almost no support from those who testified on it, though the committee passed it. There were other versions proposed on the Senate floor. One would allow the governor to appoint that special prosecutor. Another would have withheld state funds from the county. And Republican Senator Mike Young says the differing ideas doomed the bill this year.
We had about six or seven different ways we could go, and we couldn't coalesce around one way.
Young says he wants the legislature to study the issue further this summer and plans to revive it next year. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith at the State House.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson. Senate Republicans gutted protections for pregnant workers and killed a syringe exchange bill. And the House sent legislation to the governor shielding teachers and schools from poor test scores as the session's first half ended. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports on the week at the State House.
Pregnant employees aren't guaranteed some accommodations, like longer or more frequent breaks, seating, and adjusted work schedules. Legislation to help ensure that for businesses with 15 or more employees was gutted this week by Senate Republicans who were hesitant to impose requirements on small businesses. Current state law halts all syringe exchange programs July of 2021. Legislation this session would have removed that end date, but Senate Republicans defeated it. Some complain the programs give out too many needles and enable drug use, though their actual purpose is to help stop the spread of disease. And legislation on the governor's desk holds teachers and schools harmless from negative consequences of statewide standardized test scores that dropped sharply. Governor Eric Holcomb and legislative leaders of both parties made that measure a priority after the new iLearn results were released last year. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith at the State House.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson. LaPorte County will soon have an industrial park that can be served by two Class 1 rail carriers, and it'll be a one-of-a-kind in the Midwest. Lakeshore Public Radio's Sharon Jackson talked with Tony Rodriguez, director of the LaPorte County Office of Community and Economic Development, about the performance-based grant awarded to LaPorte County to support the connection of the rail spur at Kingsbury Industrial Park with the CSX mainline.
So tell us about the latest of this project, the $1 million grant. The money goes to LaPorte County, and with that money, they have to build a rail connection between Kingsbury Industrial Park and the CSX mainline?
Correct. This is something years ago, the county invested $6 million out there. There was a project. It was some cold storage that was going to be coming up out of Florida. And the county invested $6 million of major moves money out there on some rail. And we never made the project never came to be, and the connection was never made to the CSX. And so over the years, you know, it's kind of hard to market something when you don't have that connection there. So we're finally making that connection to the CSX. And at the same time, we're working on making the connection on the CN to the north also. So this should be, when we're all done, one of the only industrial parks is served by two Class 1 railroads. We're excited about this. This is something that, you know, we've been working hard to get put together for many years.
So what would this enable you to do? Just take goods and from this rail yard to all over the country?
There's several businesses out there now that are working out there, and they're serviced by the South Shore to the, I guess it'd be the Northeast. This would open it up a lot more to the business, and it would help market all the property out there. There's a lot of unused properties out there.
Can you tell us how it would increase the opportunities for economic investment and job creation in LaPorte County?
This grant came to be because of a joint work with several people, that Matt Reardon, who works with our Redevelopment Commission, Tony Rodriguez, who's with the LaPorte County Economic Development, and Jim Pressel downstate, our state rep, and Mike Bahacek, our senator. And this is going to make it so that this property out there for all the property owners is so much more marketable and accessible for the, even for the customers and the businesses that are already out there in that area. I mean, this is huge for anybody that wants to come to the area. It kind of opens it, just makes it wide open because rail is so much cheaper than trucking and everything else. So.
Do you already have businesses that want to come out to LaPorte County if this project is done?
We always have people looking. So there's several, without saying anything, there's several people looking at properties out there. I don't know if you've ever been out there, but it's the old Kingsbury Ordnance plant. So it's a huge amount of acreage out there that's privately held by different people. And there's different businesses out there now. And this will just help market that. And it's in our TIP district, so you know we reinvest. We're trying to reinvest everything we can out there to help make this work for anybody that wants to come to LaPorte to create jobs. That's what it's all about, is creating more jobs in LaPorte County.
So this being the performance-based grant, what does LaPorte County have to do to secure the money?
LaPorte County's already invested $6 million on some of the rail that's out there. We did that, like I said, years ago with Major Moves. When that project was coming out there, NHTSA has invested upwards of over $6 million on infrastructure out there, improving the electrical grid out there. JBC Rail has invested money out there. Lindbergh's have invested money in that area, you know, with the connection on the CN to the north. So we've already pretty much met all of our performance. And if it wasn't for those investments by us and by NHTSA and the different companies that are out there, we would not be eligible for this grant.
So you guys have already pretty much fulfilled the work that you have to do to get the grant, so it's already done.
Correct. And the switch, we're hoping that the switch will come in less. We know we kind of got a ballpark price on what the switch would be. And installing the switch, and then there could be some of that $1 million left over for a little bit more infrastructure out there and some of the other rail connections and making improvements out there.
So is the building project, the actual connection, is it already done, or do you still have to build that?
No, the connection still has to be made. So we just got this word. We just had a meeting last night. So it was the first time that, you know, the board has acted on this and received the information that we got to grant. And so at our next meeting in February, we'll start moving forward with what we need to do to, you know, get a contractor in there and install this switch for the CSX on the south there and get that all finalized. So we hope to have that in the works here in the next few months, at least have a plan set in place.
So is it just a switch that needs to be installed, or is it new rail tracks that have to be laid?
Correct. Right now, to make the connection to the CSX, it's a matter of making the hooking the switch in.
And what about this northern connection that you speak of to connect to the CN?
The northern connection, where the county redevelopment is currently in the process of acquiring some easements for the rail up there to make that connection. That switch is already in. It's a matter of making the rail connection from the CN to our rail that's already in the park.
Oh, okay, so
it's a little bit different thing, but and we've got some private investors there also. We're acquiring the easements, and then the investor is going to make the connection.
So in summary, what are some dates that we can look forward to, or time periods, you know, if you don't have these specific dates, about when the connections will be made?
We're very hopeful that the connection on the CSX will be done sometime this summer, as soon as we get everything in place and get a contractor set up to make that connection. And then JBC Rail that's out there, that's invested quite a bit. They're the other ones that have made quite a bit of investment out there. They would, they did quite a bit of improvements to the tracks out there. So I would say, you know, as the weather kind of breaks, and the weather hasn't been that bad really, but I think in February meeting, we're going to have a little bit more better idea of a time frame to move forward with this. So, but with both projects, we're hoping in February, because we got some of those easements, so I think we're getting ready to kind of move forward on those. On the north connection on the CN, but the CSX, like I said, The one to the south in this grant, it's, you know, with Doc Cora, the commissioner, he sits under redevelopment also. It's just been a great team effort to make this all come together.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Here's regionally speaking host Chris Nolte with a conversation with Bishop-elect Robert McClory.
Robert McClory has been a student, a lawyer, a seminarian, a pastor, and a chancellor, and now he is taking on a new challenge as the fifth bishop of the Diocese of Gary. We have a chance to talk with Bishop Robert McClory about his impending appointment, the appointment, I should say, from Pope Francis, and his impending consecration and installation as the new bishop for the Diocese of Gary, which is coming up on February 11th, 2020. Bishop McClory, thank you for joining us on Regionally Speaking today.
It's a delight to be with you, Chris, and hearty hello and blessings to all your listeners.
Thank you very much. I've had an opportunity to take a look at some of the information about your background, not only personal background, but also, too, about your religious background. Tell us first, I guess, about yourself and the position that you are coming from there in Royal Oak, Michigan.
Yeah, so currently I serve as the pastor and the rector of the National Shrine of the Little Flower, which is a basilica in Royal Oak, Michigan. It's a large and vibrant parish. We have 4,500 families. We've got a beautiful and historical edifice, along with pre-K through 12 high school. So it's a wonderful place to serve the people of God, and hopefully it's prepared me to serve an even wider flock in Northwest Indiana.
I have a very extensive Catholic education, starting from grade school there in Detroit and moving on to other schools as well. You moved on, I guess, into secular college, I understand, in fact, into a secular career. Tell us what prompted you to make the shift from college, and included attending University of Michigan and get a law degree and a practice in law, into, I guess, the calling for the priesthood.
Yeah, it's an excellent question. You know, even in my study of the law, and I had previously studied public policy with some interest in economic development, I always looked for ways to be of service, to try and make a contribution to the greater good. And so certainly that expressed itself in some interest in the law and public policy. And I think as my journey of faith continued to grow, what I realized is that the most important thing that I can give people is really the loving outreach that God wants us all to give. And so I began to reflect more fully on what God might be calling me to, and certainly I think he uses all of our background, and so my background in law and in public policy hopefully will serve as well as I'm in a pastoral role in the Diocese of Gary. But that motivation just continued to grow and express itself, and I thought, if I gave myself completely to serving Jesus in the ministry, I think that's really the best way that God would use me to have an impact on the lives of others.
When you took up the priesthood, was ordained as a priest in May of 1999, did you have any thought at all about the possibility that you would end up being a bishop?
I did not. You know, this is something that just comes suddenly, and your life has changed in an instant. And so, really, I had no idea until I received a phone call from someone called the Papal Nuncio. It's like the Pope's ambassador to the United States, but also his delegate to the Church in the United States. And he called me up and said, "The Holy Father has appointed you the Bishop of Gary." And I said, I knew it was Gary. He said, "Gary." I said, "I am delighted." And I said, "If that's the Holy Father's wishes, I'll be happy to fulfill that." I said, "I don't think I'm worthy, but if the Holy Father wants me, then I'll do my best." And so he was very grateful for that, and my life was suddenly changed, and all changed for the good. The people of Gary have been so loving and kind and supportive, and the people of the region that I've had a chance to encounter have genuinely given me the love and embrace, which I'm very grateful for.
One of the things I noticed in getting ready for our conversation was that it's interesting that you, being the Bishop of McClory, will be, when your ordination happens here in February, as actually going to be Gary's second bishop with some Detroit ties. You being a native of Detroit and the region and in Michigan, it's interesting that Bishop Dale Melchick, who was the bishop previous to you back, was also involved in the priesthood in Detroit.
Yes, and for me, that's been just a tremendous blessing. Over the years, I've had the opportunity to meet and converse with Bishop Melchick on several occasions. He certainly had an excellent reputation in Detroit for his service here, And then, you know, from afar, not too far away, Detroit and Gary aren't that far away, the opportunity to just really appreciate and admire all that he's done there. One of the special blessings that the timing of my announcement as the bishop was just before something called an ad limina visit, which is a visit of the bishops of a particular region to Rome to meet with the Pope and also to pray at some of the holy sites. So during that occasion, which was a week in Rome, I was with Bishop Melchek during that time, as well as Bishop Donald Hying, who had immediately succeeded Bishop Melchek for the last 5.5 years. And so that was a wonderful way to be kind of welcomed into the fraternity that is in Gary.
Had you had the chance ever to visit Vatican City in the past, or was that your first visit?
Well, it was my the first time that I met Pope Francis. I did study in Rome, so I was there for 5 years. During that time, it would have been St. John Paul II, so it was a real treat to be able to meet Pope Francis, and not just meet him, but we were in a setting where he meets with groups of bishops, so there were about 25 of us bishops from Indiana, Illinois, and Wisconsin, and we had about a two-and-a-half-hour meeting with Pope Francis, which was a real delight.
In the transition here from being involved in the diocese and archdiocese in Detroit, coming to become the bishop of the Diocese of Gary, are there any similarities? Are there any differences between the two?
Well, I'd like to think that there are. I, you know, certainly don't want to presume Gary's history to some significant degree. I'll be welcomed, and that'll become my new home very shortly. But I think to the extent that we're both, you know, part of the industrial Great Lakes, that there are some commonalities. Certainly the presence of a dominant industry that experienced some transformation and some periods of economic downturns, both in Detroit, heavily reliant on the auto industry, and of course Gary, historically identified with the steel industry. Our communities can be highly sensitive to economic fluctuations and also, you know, the dislocation that can occur when such economic downturns take place. So having that experience, I hope, will give me a sense of compassion and understanding as I come to Gary. But I would also say, you know, I'm a healthily proud son of Detroit, and I will be a proud son of Gary. And I think sometimes those communities, perhaps that have had some similar struggles, can almost begin to feel a little bit like we're marginalized, and that's certainly not God's plan. God's love is for all of us. And even if, you know, the rest of the world doesn't know all the gifts that we have, we know the gifts that we have. And so I really hope to bring a message of encouragement and hopefulness and God's love. And I think some of my experience in Detroit may be transferable into Gary, just having a kind of a sensitivity to what it means to be in communities that have gone through those changes and struggles and come out for the better, ultimately, because of it.
Are there any special plans that, in the meantime, that you have thought about between the time that the announcement came out in November and your impending ordination and installation as the bishop? Anything special that you have maybe in mind for the folks here of the Diocese of Gary?
Well, this has been a real time of information gathering for me, of course, planning some of the logistics of the liturgy itself that will be occurring. But as I look beyond February 11th, there are probably about three areas that I think would be good for me to focus on, three or four. I mean, initially, as I said, just being a presence of hope and encouragement. We're in the midst of finalizing a public schedule so that after the 11th, I'll be having the opportunity to have masses or opportunities to be at some significant events throughout the four counties. Beyond that would be really to get to know the needs of the flock in Gary so that I can listen and I can receive and get a deeper appreciation for what the people of Gary might need and want at this time. The third area that I'm very privileged to be able to build upon is that Bishop Hying in 2017 had what's called a diocesan synod, and that's a pretty rare occurrence in the life of a diocese. And so that was a convening of leaders and a time of reflection for the whole Diocese of Gary that occurred in 2017. And so that laid forth some pastoral priorities, some areas that we need to focus on in terms of evangelization and service to others. And so I feel as though that will give me a foundation to be able to reach out and have some guideposts as I begin to minister. And then finally, of course, I'm coming as the Catholic bishop, the Roman Catholic bishop, to the Diocese of Gary, but I also see myself as having a responsibility to be a good member of the wider community, to make sure that people understand that the Catholic Church, whether you're Catholic or not, whether you have another faith or no faith, that we exist to bring to be good neighbors, to bring God's love, and to do our part in the wider community. So that's also something that I see as significant when I come into Gary.
Well, Bishop Robert McClory, thank you very much for speaking with us, and we look forward to having a chance to meet you when you do make your visit and become the new bishop of the Diocese of Gary on February 11th. Thank you for spending some time
talking
today.
Regionally speaking with host Chris Nolte can be heard each Monday through Thursday at noon on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM and streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org, where you can also find podcasts of the show when you click on the program link. For the latest in local news and information, tune in Monday at 6 a.m. for Morning Edition with local host Chris Nolte. Lakeshore Update is supported by the listeners and members of Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Podcasts for Lakeshore Update are posted each Friday on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Make sure you search for WLPR and select us as your home station. Music for Lakeshore Update was written and produced by bensound.com. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Dee Dotson.